I'm going to go ahead and get started. We're missing a few members, but we'll begin. We have two bills to go through today and have some discussion around each of them. One of the things I neglected to do in our last meeting that I'd like to do today is to welcome our page who's working with us, and that's Melissa Lamb. Melissa, would you stand up? Thank you very much. We look forward to working with you. And you've already been to one meeting with us, so you did a great job. Thank you. Okay. Representative Benson.
Yes, ma'am.
Welcome to your committee, and if you'd like to move your house around.
I have a, good morning, I'm a chair and committee members. I have a delete all.
Okay, and do you have a number of that?
DE1 for House File 2535.
Representative Benson moves, first of all, he moves the House File 2535. Let's see, whoops, we're short, I think, one person. All right. Well, I think what we'll do is...
Maybe we just discuss it and then...
Yeah, we'll go ahead and discuss it. What I'd like to do is be able to honor your request to have the Delete Everything Amendment since it's kind of major. Oh, I think we might have a quorum now. Yes, we don't have a quorum. Okay, so Representative Benson moves House File 2535 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the bill that will be coming out of this committee recommending bonding. And the first thing that you want to move then is the deletion, the delete all amendment, EE1.
Yes.
Would you like to explain that, please?
Yes. We will get into a discussion of a new and superior funding mechanism which requires this delete.
All right.
We can go into some detail.
Well, we'll just go ahead then and put the bill in the order that the author would like. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. And we now have the DE1 amendment before us as the delete all bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm very, very pleased to be able to carry this critical piece of legislation. In order to help complete a significant and ongoing project by the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, to move our state forward towards seriously addressing the homelessness crisis that we face in this state, and during this challenging economic time in our state, when so many worthy capital projects are before us, I urge the committee to consider the human suffering caused by homelessness in our state. Some have estimated that as many as 100 people die of exposure on the streets in our metropolitan area each year, and we have no idea what the suffering level is or death row in greater Minnesota. This proposal, then, is more than just another worthy capital investment request. It is a moral obligation for the state of Minnesota. And I would like to introduce Tanya Orr, who is Assistant Commissioner from the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, to discuss the details of our bonding request and to make the case for its adoption.
Thank you, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Tanya Orr from the Housing Finance Agency. Over half of the adults who were surveyed in the last Wilder Research Center survey of homelessness in Minnesota meet the definition of long-term homelessness, meaning they've been without a permanent place to live for at least 12 months or have been without a permanent place to live for at least three to four times in the last 3 years. This proposal before you is intended to provide permanent funds, some permanent supportive housing for that population. Research has shown that neither housing alone nor services alone are sufficient for people who have experienced long-term homelessness. They need to have both housing and services. and that is why we are requesting funding for permanent supportive housing. This request is intended to be the last exclusive request for a capital investment from the state under the plan to end long-term homelessness. When we put together the plan in 2003-2004, we intended to ask for three cycles of bonding, and this would be the last one under the plan. We may come back next bonding cycle and ask for a little bit more for long-term homelessness, but our expectation is if we are successful this year and continue to make the progress that we have made under the plan, we would not have to devote all of the capital investment resources to the plan. Under our plan to try and end long-term homelessness, we need to finance 1,600 housing opportunities over the next 2 years. This is nearly as many housing opportunities as we've funded since 2004. The capital investment that we're requesting is crucial to the continued success of our plan, and we'll fund about 250 to 300 housing units. Last week, there was some concern expressed that MHFA was not using funding to create other sorts of housing to help people experiencing homelessness. Since 2004, in the projects that have long-term homeless units in them, for every one long-term homeless housing unit created, we created five other housing units, affordable housing units. So, for example, in the Chairman's District, the Lutheran Social Services Project has 48 units. 10 of those are long-term homeless. The other 38 units are affordable housing that are available to people who have experienced homelessness, who are low income, who need affordable housing. In Representative Moe's district, we recently funded a project that's owned by the Headwaters Housing Development, that is 20 units, 16 of which are long-term homeless. So we have been very successful in leveraging the funding that you've provided for long-term homeless units with other funding available to the agency, such as tax credits and the Housing Trust Fund, to create a variety of housing needs to meet the needs of people who are both long-term homeless and other populations that have a need for affordable housing. The proposal before you, the Delete Everything Amendment, is an alternative to general obligation bonds. The Housing Finance Agency has been using general obligation bond proceeds since 1990 to fund housing. It has been, at best, a difficult fit, and there are a couple of reasons for that. One is that under the Constitution, projects that are funded with general obligation bonds must be owned by a public entity. We have been very successful in that we've been able to use all of the money that you have appropriated for these purposes, but it has sometimes been quite a struggle to find a public owner that is comfortable with the idea of owning housing, particularly in small communities that have no experience with owning housing. They don't have any public housing. They've never owned any housing. It's been a real leap for them to take on the responsibilities of owning affordable housing. We also, as I mentioned, we have used resources in combination with one another to develop both long-term homeless units and other units. The combining GO bond proceeds and other resources has been incredibly difficult. Because of the constitutional requirements, we have had to spend a lot of extra money on legal fees, both for the agency and the developer of the project. And we have had to spend more money and take more time in terms of the construction of the project. Our favorite example is LSS that was funded recently that has 10 long-term homeless units, has some GO bonds proceeds, but also has a variety of other resources in it, including tax credits and money that LSS has raised. Because of the constitutional requirements, that project has had to have extra heating units, different hallways, extra elevators, all of which add to the cost. and are really not necessary to the development, but are necessary to meet the constitutional requirements for the use of DOI. The Delete Everything Amendment would avoid those problems, and we think will significantly speed up the development of supportive housing, and we think actually we'll see a lot more interest in the use of these funds, because nonprofits will not have to negotiate with public, with local units of government for the ownership piece. What this proposal, the proposal before you has been reviewed both by Standards and Poor's and Moody's, and they are quite comfortable with it. I should mention, in case you're not aware of it, the Housing Finance Agency is one of frequently the second largest issuer of bonds in the state. So it is it's an area that we're quite accustomed to doing work in. The rate that that would be available to us would be substantially the same as the state DO bond rate. We will need to manage the debt service that's appropriated to us within the rates that are available at the time we sell the bonds, and we will do that to match the amount of money that's made available. What the proposal does is make a standing appropriation of up to $2.4 million each year for 20 years for the debt service payments on nonprofit bonds issued by the state. Issued by the Housing Finance Agency. This would be a standing appropriation, and the state is explicitly not pledging its taxing power to pay the debt service. But the Housing Finance Agency would have the ability to pledge whatever payments the state is making for debt service to paying off the bond. The agency is authorized to issue up to $30 million of nonprofit bonds for permanent supported housing for people experiencing long-term homelessness or at risk, and could use a small portion of it for people who don't meet that definition. The $30 million, as I said, would be of bonds. We would be authorized to pledge the whatever payments the state is making to paying the debt service. The nonprofit bonds are tax exempt as long as the nonprofit meets the IRS code definition. In a lot of ways, this is very similar to what happens in a general obligation bond, except that it's a different issuer. Because of our constitution, the debt service needs to be appropriated separately. Since it's not a general obligation bond, we would use the money for an existing program. So, to the extent that we're funding permanent supportive housing, we would most likely would run the money through the Housing Trust Fund. So, it would be very easy for applicants to access the money because it's a program that they're very used to working with. Some of you may know that this model has been used recently to fund the Gopher Stadium and is being proposed for the University of Minnesota Bioscience Building. So it's not uncharted territory for the legislature, but it is a different way of funding housing. So we're asking that that you make funding for housing for long-term homeless people the priority among all of the pressing housing needs, and that you communicate to your colleagues and the Finance Committee and Ways and Means and the Capital Investment Committee that this proposal needs to be fully funded. Thank you.
That's our question. Representative Peterson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I want to talk about the mechanics of the bonding.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, Lutheran Social Service will issue the bond.
No.
Own the housing. If in this proposal, you're going to set aside $2.4 million to be used for debt service, and then you will dedicate that to a particular project, to a particular developer, i.e., owner. Lutheran Social Service, for instance.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, we will have the authority to issue up to $30 million of bonds. We may issue bonds for several projects at a time or one project, depending upon how big it is.
Okay.
The debt service, the $2.4 million, is for $30 million worth of bonds each year. So Lutheran Social Services, for example, would be an owner. We do expect that we will see an application from them. But we will be issuing the bonds on behalf of that project. And then we're asking you for the appropriations so that we can pay off the bonds.
Okay. But, Madam Chair, you state in Subdivision 3 that's not public debt, and the full faith and credit and taxing powers of the state are not pledged to the payment. So are you going to go out and enhance these bonds through an insurer, or how are you going to get them marketable?
Okay.
If it's not the full faith and credit of the state, and yet the state agency is issuing them.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, these are what, now, I don't profess to be a bond expert, but I have picked up a little bit in the 10 years that I've worked at the agency. These are what are known as appropriation bonds. We've been talking with the rating agencies for 2 years now about this possibility. They do not feel any need for a credit enhancement. Part of the reason is because the state has an excellent credit rating, and the Housing Finance Agency also has an excellent credit rating. So they feel quite comfortable that neither one of us wants to do anything to harm that credit rating. So they have no concerns about it and have assured us that we will get a good rating on those bonds and get a good interest rate.
Okay, I like that. How do you then create some kind of a lien or obligation on the part of Lutheran Social Service that project performs and functions in a way that justifies your committing these bonds?
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, it actually will be the same as what we currently do with CO bonds or other resources. We have a mortgage on the property, and it's a loan that we can call, and it sets forth all of the terms. If we run into problems, we have that sort of leverage there to work through any issues that we have. But we've been really very successful because we work with people that we know are committed to meeting the same goals that we are.
Madam Chair? Thank you. And I appreciate that. And probably your agency, more than many, are stellar at that kind of a function. Are you going to be back here then in 2-3 years and ask for another supplemental, another 30 with a debt service of 2.8 or 2.9? Do we start seeing this pyramid and leverage? If so, that's fine, but we should talk about it.
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative, I sort of wish you hadn't asked that question because the truth of the matter is, yes, we will be back. It's going to be a little more obvious or transparent. As opposed to, we've asked every 2 years since 1990, we've asked the deal bond proceeds. But, you know, the bill passes and it sort of disappears. This will be more obvious. But it is our intention that this would be the substitute for GO bonds, assuming that it all works the way that we think it will. We do think it will be cheaper and faster. And so we will be back. I can't tell you how much. I can't tell you how much we will request for a loan, what the governor would recommend. But I would like you to think about it as though it's really the same as if we were making a GO bond request.
I'm sure. Or I would just as soon think of it as we build a wall one brick at a time. And we add to that, we build a hedge protection around the state in some way in the area of housing.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Orr, on page 2 of this Civil Amendment, it talks about the $2.4 million. It says the appropriation may be made for more than 20 years, commencing with the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2009. So I'm wondering if we, you're saying you're going to keep coming back, but it looks like we're putting in the statute that you can come back more than 20 years and ask for this $2.4 million to be continually paying off the debt service.
Exactly.
Madam Chair, I was going to mention that the bonds that we would issue under this authority would be 20-year bonds. So for this chunk, I know that's a really technical term, for this authority of $30 million, we would have to manage to pay off the bonds within 20 years. Now, in response to Representative Peterson's question, we may ask for another amount of money for a new activity 2 years from now. And so that would start the clock running for another 20 years. This is really why I don't make that into this. But it is no different than in 2004, you appropriated, I think, about $16 million for the agency, and those bonds have to be paid off over a period of time. In 2006, you appropriated $19 million to the agency, and those bonds have to be paid off over a period of time. This is just putting in steps because we need to have a standing appropriation that needs to be there. This is putting in statute something that's really very similar to what you're doing with the bonds.
Other questions, comments? Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Orr. I guess the only other question I have is on those previous appropriations, have all of those bonds been let?
Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson. Because we're not the issuer of the VO bonds, I think, as I understand it, we have committed all of the money and have closed many of the loans for the projects that are being funded with the VO bonds. The state does, the Department of Finance does a sort of cash flow need and issues bonds as needed. They may have issues, so they don't issue bonds for particular projects. They just issue bonds based on what they're going to need. So, all I can tell you, because we're not the issuer, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you that all of the funding has been committed.
Okay.
Other questions? Representative Anderson?
Madam Chair, these nonprofit housing bonds, how long have they been in effect as far as when did we first start putting them into play?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, the agency has actually had the authority to issue nonprofit housing bonds. It's part of its general authority. We haven't had the debt service, and that's one of the reasons that we haven't issued those bonds. As terms of the state using it, I'm only aware of the Gopher Stadium, and there was something similar with the office buildings, the DHS, and maybe the Department of Agriculture or the Department of Health office building. It wasn't exactly the same, but it was similar. It's Minnesota, and using it as an alternative to the bonds is, I think, a relatively new thing. Ms. Levita may know more since she served on the committee. Hater dude. Other states, for instance, Connecticut, does not have the same constitutional restrictions that we do, and the Connecticut Housing Finance Agency has been issuing 501c3 bonds, and the state has been paying the debt service, and actually can use its taxing authority to pay the debt service. But that's a different constitutional arrangement than we have.
Thank you.
So I have a question. One thing to construct the building and get them in the ground and so on. What is the administration's commitment to the services, providing the services for long-term homeless housing that we're talking about constructing here?
Madam Chair, as you know, there is a few years ago, a flexible service fund was created at the Department of Human Services, and there has been money appropriated for that fund to sort of fill in the gaps where mainstream funding, such as medical assistance, does not cover things. We have used the Department of Human Services has been creative in using some of its mainstream resources, such as DRH funding, to help meet the service needs for these long-term homeless units. In addition, The private sector has made a very significant commitment to help fund the service needs and other needs related to this effort to end long-term homelessness. In December, there was a press conference where a number of the large philanthropic organizations announced a commitment to raise, I believe it's $60 million over the next few years. As you know, the Fry Foundation has made a commitment of $5 million. We expect that we'll have an additional commitment to them publicly. So there have been a number of fairly serious fundraisers who have made a commitment to this effort.
Okay. And can you tell me what kind of gap we might be talking about? Because I know last year we actually didn't fully fund supportive housing. So what kind of gap are we looking at?
Madam Chair, our goal is to create 800 units each of the next 800 housing opportunities each of the next 2 years. This proposal will fund between 250 and 300. We've been successful in sort of cobbling together various funding sources to meet the goals that we've had in the past. Part of the gap will frankly depend upon what happens next year with the biennial budget.
I just want to share with the committee that some of my concern, because last year I know we shorted one of our long-term housing programs by $1 million, and you know that's I think 150 some people out on the street. So just, you know, we need to be cautious. We need to be aware of the fact that, you know, even if we strongly support constructing the facilities, we need to make sure that we have the funding for to do the services that we're promising. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Orr, homelessness is across the state, and you basically focus, I guess, in the Twin City or the greater the metropolitan area, and then the greater outstate. How do you determine the doling out of these bonds and stuff, and who gets what, and is it by region, or is it by, like the 10th Judicial District, or, you know, what's your process in delivering these, and who gets what and where, and is it mainly because of the concentration of homelessness in a certain area versus, say, across the board, or what's your parameters?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, let me answer that in a couple of different ways. Of the $19.2 million that was appropriated in deal bonds in 2006, one, two, three, four of the projects were funded. We're located in Greater Minnesota, the Mid-D, Detroit Lakes, Rochester. And four of the projects were in the Twin Cities. One is in Eugene, the other two are in Minneapolis, the others are in Minneapolis and St. Paul. So we've actually funded projects. We don't have an allocation. We do know that homelessness is a problem all over the state. You do tend to see more long-term homeless in the Twin Cities. Wilder hypothesizes that that's due to the fact that there are shelters and other services here, and so people will come here. I know when I've looked at the data from Wilder in the past, if when they ask you where did you last live, it's often not in the Twin Cities. They often came from someplace else in Minnesota. The way we allocate resources is really based on the community identifying a need and coming to us and asking us for help. So we don't do 50% goes to Greater Minnesota. We really rely on the community to identify the need and help us.
Thank you.
Other questions? Okay. I think there's a couple other witnesses that you wanted to bring, Representative Benson. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. There's probably room for both of you there. You can just pull the chairs up. Welcome to the committee, and you can just introduce yourself, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is George Stone. I'm the director of the Corporation for Supportive Housing Minnesota Program. Do you want us both to say
sure. Go ahead, Alan.
And I'm Alan Arthur, and I'm the president of AON and a board member of the Minnesota Housing Partnership.
Thank you for allowing me to speak on House Files 2535. I promise to be brief and do my best to address any questions you may have from my testimony. As I mentioned, my name is George Stone. I'm with the Corporation for Supportive Housing, otherwise known as CSH. And I'm here today to speak in support of Minnesota Housing's request for $30 million in nonprofit funding. My organization, I think it's worth just saying a couple of words about it. I'll be brief about that, but I think it offers some insight as to why I'm here speaking in front of you today. CSH is a national intermediary organization whose mission is to help communities create permanent housing with services to prevent and end homelessness. Since opening our office in Minnesota in 1993, we've provided advocacy, expertise, leadership, and financial resources to advance supportive housing opportunities for Minnesotans. Minnesotans who are not only experiencing homelessness, but for whom housing instability is exacerbated by additional barriers such as mental illness, substance abuse, and disabling health conditions. For this reason, CSH and many of our partners were elated when the state launched its business plan to end long-term homelessness in 2004. It's an ambitious but achievable plan that calls for the creation of 4,000 supportive housing opportunities as a primary strategy for ending long-term homelessness. You see, providing people with permanent housing and the supports they need to stay housed is a tested and proven practice which improves not only the outcomes for those individuals or families living in supportive housing, but effectively uses public resources to end homelessness rather than manage it through costly crisis-related interventions such as jails, detox, shelters, hospitals, and others. House File 2535 requests $30 million in additional capital investments for the creation of approximately 250 more units of supportive housing. As Ms. Orr mentioned, this is the last capital bonding request outlined in the state's plan. And our state has met or surpassed supportive housing production goals every year since 2004. I think there are many reasons for this, but three primary ones that come to mind are as follows. Leadership. You can look at leadership from various areas. The public sector, which includes strong champions such as Commissioner Marks and the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. Also, strong leadership from other state agencies such as the Department of Human Services, and strong leadership from our legislature. There's also, as Ms. Orr mentioned, strong private sector leadership coming through primarily Heading Home Minnesota, the statewide effort to increase philanthropic funding as a companion to the public resources which are going into ending long-term homelessness. Ms. Orr outlined the new creative, innovative approach around bonding that CSH and many of our partners strongly support. We strongly support it for many of the reasons she outlined, including increased efficiency and the ability to leverage other funding. I also think another reason for the success has been resources. We couldn't do this without the money. The legislature has saw the value of supportive housing and allocated new resources into the state plan, including the over $45 million in GEO bonds that were referenced just a moment ago. As Ms. Orr mentioned, that at least 98%, to my knowledge, has been committed, and over 350 units have been funded as a result. I actually passed a document around as a brief summary of the projects which have been funded previously through the GEO bond. And you'll notice on there that, as it was discussed, these projects are across the state supporting a variety of different populations experiencing long-term homelessness, including individual single adults, homeless youth, and families. One of the last key parts of the success comes from our partners. This would not be possible without ready, willing, capable project sponsors able to use the resources that have been committed to the legislature. Another handout that I've provided you is what we like to refer to as our pipeline. These are projects, and as you notice, from around the state that are in the pre-development phase. These are projects that are ready and willing and will, in large part because of the work that we do with them, be capable of using those resources if they're allocated. You can see that there are over 300 units in pre-development to serve the long-term homeless. If we have an additional 250 units worth of funding, we should be able to put that to good use right away. And so, I will welcome questions that you may have, but I'd like to leave you with a few requests. One is to accept and authorize the new nonprofit bonding approach outlined by Ms. Orr, and two, And this is the harder part, because as a housing advocate in general, I realize it would be great to do as much as we can in housing, and I appreciate anything that the legislature is willing to do. Also, in the realities of the economic climate we're in, I know that you're all under a great deal of pressure to figure out what you're going to fund and not. I would like to make a strong argument to prioritize and fully fund House File 2535. We're almost there. It's within our grasp, and this is the last specific capital request to help us reach our goal. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Stone, any questions? Any members? Comments? Thank you. Mr. Arthur?
Again, my name is Alan Arthur, and I'm the president and CEO of AON, which is a 501c3 nonprofit provider of affordable homes for people in our community. And I'm also a board member of the Minnesota Housing Partnership, and I'm here on behalf of both organizations, AON and the Minnesota Housing Partnership, to speak in favor of and support of House File 2535. AON, the organization that I'm the president and CEO of, has 1,500 affordable apartment homes for folks in our community, and approximately 400 for homeless people. We're formerly homeless people now, which makes us one of the leading providers, if not the leading provider, of permanent housing for homeless people in the state of Minnesota. We were one of the first organizations in the country, really, to do affordable housing, for example, in 1995-96 for homeless teenagers, homeless youth. We just finished our second one 2 years ago, supportive housing for homeless kids on our streets, which is fairly critical for our futures, I believe. Again, we support this bill because it provides not only the funding, but also provides the funding in a flexible way. It allows us to piece together projects in a way that makes most sense and makes them happen, frankly. The current GO bonding situation is inflexible. Just for example, from a flexibility standpoint, it allows us to put affordable homes for homeless people in an existing project or another development that we're working on. We just last year finished redevelopment of an old historic building in downtown St. Paul, 70 units of affordable housing, all of it affordable. We carved out 14 units for homeless folks, for chronically homeless folks, to help meet the state's goals. And so this project or this proposal allows us to do that kind of thing and continue to provide housing for folks on the street. You know, why we do it, of course, is because folks need it. Our communities need it. People need it. Well, I could tell a story of a young man by the name of Thomas who came to our homeless housing project in St. Barnabas for homeless youth who had been in 70 foster care placements. That's 70 foster care placements. I had to ask that question 4 or 5 times before I finally got it through my brain. 70. And he came off the streets, obviously, with lots of problems. The problem wasn't with the 70 foster care families, I guarantee there were problems with Thomas. And yet he got off the street, back in school, graduated from high school, and was accepted to Hamline University, and had to make the tough choice as to whether to go to Hamline or to the Army. And these are the kinds of reasons why we need to do more of this, so that folks in our communities have a chance, have an opportunity. And we're proud to be a part of it. I'd like to invite you, anytime you'd like to come to the Crane Ordway, which is not very far from here, and do a tour or of our St. Barnabas development for homeless youth, and I invite you to ask me any questions if you have them. So thank you for your time today.
Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill here talks about the Delete All Amendment talks about refinancing of affordable housing and also talks about the rehabilitation of permanent supportive housing. How much of the bill here do you know is going to be used to maintain or fix up old housing now for homeless, and how much is going to be going for new? Do you know any of those parameters? And are we looking at, is part of this bill going to be used for vacant buildings that could be made into homeless projects to help out in this situation?
Chairman Clark, Representative Anderson, I really don't have any data on that, although I can talk a little bit about history. And in general, I think you're going to see certainly a chunk of the funds used in vacant buildings and problem properties, because that kills two birds with one stone. It's also a little bit more efficient way to provide housing for folks. But Ms. Orr might actually have more data on projections about that.
Would you like to have Ms. Orr come and respond to that?
Also, if you could, do you know of any of these buildings that are being that have to be fixed up because of problems with the building? I mean, as far as, you know, insulation that's bad, you know, things that don't meet code now that have to be taken out and to brought up to code today. Are there some things that part of this money will go for?
Chair Kevin Clark, Representative Anderson. Again, typically in the affordable housing world, about half is new construction and half is using existing buildings. And when it's in existing buildings, yes, it always brings the entire building up to new code situation. And so I suspect that will continue in a broad sense throughout, not only this kind of housing funding, but all kind of housing funding in the state of Minnesota for affordable housing.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson. I'm sorry. I was hoping to be able to respond to your first question and possibly maybe to your second. Like Mr. Arthur, I can't exactly tell you how the agency is going to propose to use the new funding and how that breakdown would happen. But again, looking back historically on how funding has been used, often these new funds, which are typically intended to create new units of supportive housing, are used in projects which both rehabilitate existing properties or create new ones. A good example of that might be the St. Paul residence, which was done, and it's actually highlighted on this sheet right here. That is a project that was done in partnership with the St. Paul HRA and Catholic Charities. 60 of those 120 units were considered existing units for the population. The building was in disrepair and needed significant work. What they were able to do is to not only recreate units to house those 60 folks, but add an additional 60 new units of long-term homeless supportive housing units. So often what you find when, and I believe Ms. Orr mentioned this earlier, is this funding with it carries the ability to bring in new resources that are able to have a ripple effect, if you will, and create other housing opportunities in conjunction with the new long-term homeless units that are created.
Madam Chair, I find in communities across the state that, and I hope this is the case, that there are buildings that are standing existing empty and businesses that have left the communities and they're a good opportunity, and I'm hoping that if this is the case and that the local community puts in a bid for homeless, that the agency or those people that come out and do that can take a look at some of these places and utilize them. Because otherwise these buildings just get demolished, and it's unfortunate that they couldn't be used for something like this.
Thank you,
sir. I just like to make a comment, and that is I'm from the community of Woodbury, and I noticed in Sunday's Tribune that we have one of the highest rates of affordable housing in the state, which really surprised me because our city has been very deliberate in providing very scattered, but yet very a lot of opportunities for low-income families to find housing. And I do like my city's approach on that. I guess what I would like to ask you, even though there is a dark cloud over the housing market right now, are you seeing the downturn in the price of homes as a silver lining for you, an opportunity to buy up properties, some like what Representative Anderson was talking about? To me, this seems like if we're going to approve this bonding money, that we need to be thinking about some of the most creative and perhaps take these opportunities to find homes or buildings that have been vacated as a result of the housing downturn to use it for this kind of opportunity.
Madam Chair, Representative. Obviously there will be opportunities. There'll be opportunities both in buildings, as Representative Anderson promoted. The Crane Ordway building in St. Paul had been vacant historic building for 30 years, and so that's a reuse of a very important asset. And there will be single families available for family housing in this venue. I will say that in general, the supportive housing we do are for folks who really have a significant need for support. So that the use of those buildings and those locations have to be strategic in nature, and I think communities do get to figure that out and can figure that out in a successful way. So, yes.
Well, thank you. As a follow-up, I do want to say that the other night, I guess I
watch the news and read the newspaper a lot, but there was, I don't remember if it was WCCO, but they did show a gentleman in St. Paul who had been chronically homeless moving into an apartment. And it's too bad that you don't have that news clip with you as part of your presentation, because it was incredibly moving. It is a success story. And you know, one of the reasons I decided to become a legislator was because it's caring about the people rather than, sometimes more so than, putting together wonkish policy. So I congratulate you on what you're doing for our community, and I'm sure that you've touched many lives, and I hope you continue to do so.
Before we go any further, I just wanted to introduce the 12th grade students from Princeton High School, Princeton, Minnesota. Welcome. They're participating in the Minnesota Historical Society's Voice of the People project, and I want to welcome you to the Housing and Public Health Committee. Okay, any other questions or comments for our witnesses? I think there was a question from Representative Anderson, maybe, that we might... Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Shumpert.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Is this enough? I mean, how many people are at risk for long-term homelessness? You ever talk about that in rural areas? Can you give us some sense of that?
Madam Chair, Representative Shumpert, that information I don't have at the top of my head. However, you know, one of the primary sources of information that the state uses and relies on to capture that information is the Wilder Survey that's conducted every 3 years.
Right.
That has shown over the years continued growth in homelessness, and only recently shown some leveling off and maybe even tapering off in some areas. In terms of the numbers of folks who are at risk, there are a number of things being done to address that, including last year the legislature approved an increase to the Family Homelessness Prevention and Assistance Program, which actually doubled it for use throughout the state. And I know that many of the more regional efforts, Heading Home Ramsey, Heading Home Hennepin, Heading Home Northeast, and many others around the state have been doing a better job of trying to capture that information and providing what we would consider things on the front end, so outreach and prevention efforts to try and avoid the numbers of people experiencing long-term homelessness from growing. I don't necessarily have that information. However, we do, as you see by this list, have a great deal of work going on in just about every area of the state where we've been able to do that work. And I think with the growing understanding of what homelessness looks like in various areas, including more rural areas, it can look as if there's at least an immediate expansion, because I think we're doing a better job of figuring out who's homeless and where they're at. But I think we're also at the same time doing a better job of working with communities throughout the state to address that and to increase the supply of affordable and supportive housing.
President Benson, did you want to comment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to respond also to Representative Shumpter. This was an important question for me as well. And what we have here is a project which, if we do fully fund it, and I hope we will fully fund it, we'll be able to complete a project which has been ongoing for a number of years. And the issue all of us are facing here in the legislature is a tremendous need and limited resources. And my concern is that we make available these funds because of the competition for all kinds of worthy projects. I believe the number I at one time heard was there were three times the number of requests for bonding this year than we have opportunity to actually provide. And I know there's some flexibility in all that, but we have to achieve what is achievable. And I would urge my colleagues to remember the old line that we do not want the perfect to destroy the good. And these are very good projects which I think are reasonable this year in this bonding year. And but I share your concern that these needs are still outstanding and will continue, hopefully not grow, but are certainly there. Yeah, Madam Chair, I just want to, you know, I'm really concerned, and I'm hoping and I'm thinking you all have probably thought about this too. What is this wave of foreclosures going to do to homelessness? And the reason I'm asking that is I'm hoping we're going to be putting enough effort we can into foreclosure counseling and other things to prevent the next step, which is homelessness. Do you have any comment? Are you expecting a big increase because of this wave of foreclosures?
Kathy? Madam Chair, Representative, can't help. It definitely, you know, I don't think anybody predicts exactly the impact. It depends on how long it lasts, what alternatives are presented for homeownership. There's a lot of, there is a tremendous amount of effort going on out there to fix the homeownership and foreclosure problem. But you're right, if it continues, if it gets worse, it's clearly going to contribute to homelessness in our community. Just back on the previous question, there are somewhere between 9,000 and 10,000 homeless folks in the state in any given year in the last 3 years. About 1,000 to some people say 2,000 because it's hard to count them, homeless teenagers. And of that 9 or 10,000, about 4,000, and we started this task force on 10 chronic homelessness, about 4,000, 4,500 were considered chronically homeless. And of course, those are the folks that, as per the 80-20 rule, 80% of the resources are spent on those 4,500. And so that's the goal that the state has to end chronic homelessness of that homeless overall homelessness population, and that's what this bill would help do.
Okay. I think we had a question for Ms. Orr from Representative Anderson. And can you come forward and give that, and then we're going to try to move on to the next bill. Ms. Orr? You need him to repeat the question.
Madam Chair, I think I remember it was a question about using money for rehab versus new construction. Under the plan, and I'm a little embarrassed to say that I can't remember the exact percentage, but we had assumed that the majority of the units developed would be done through rehabilitation as opposed to new construction. So partly that was a matter of economics because it's cheaper, and it's also faster because the buildings are there. So we are encouraging people to look at opportunities for rehabilitation before they think about new construction. It doesn't always work, but that certainly is our intention.
While you're there, I just have one question. On page 2 of the amendment, there's on line 2.23, there's a phrase, an insubstantial portion can be used for other for folks who do not meet the criteria. And I'm wondering, first of all, what is that insubstantial portion that you project?
Madam Chair, bond counsel tells me that substantial is a term of art in the bonding world. And so that if we say insubstantial, they know that it's the reverse of substantial. And substantial is usually about 90 to 95% of the proceeds.
So insubstantial means about 5 and 10%. If that's the intention here. Okay. And do you know what other purposes might be addressed by that? Is there any? It's obviously in here to provide a little flexibility or wiggle room. I'm just wondering what you might have in mind.
Madam Chair, it's intended to. We are planning on serving both people who meet the definition of long-term homeless, but also people who are at risk. So people who are maybe 8 months homeless, or you know, suffer from a mental illness. And then there's a group of people that we know, a little less than half of the people surveyed don't meet the definition of long-term homeless. We want to give some flexibility so that projects don't have to turn away someone. In fact, you know, if that group's presenting themselves, they don't want to turn them away because they haven't met the definition.
Thank you. That is one of the questions I have, because as we talk about the issue of foreclosures, some of our folks that may be made homeless by foreclosure wouldn't be eligible if they had only been in home. So maybe that's the thing that represents this question. Okay, any other questions or comments? Anybody else want to testify on this bill? Anybody else? Okay, and then after this witness, we'll be moving on to the next bill. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mike Lavall. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. I know I had the opportunity to testify last week, so I don't want to take up too much time, but I want to end homelessness. We need to do many things, and Representative Benson, I hope that the full $30 million worth of financing happens. But we will not end homelessness or end long-term homelessness until we do everything we can to prevent people from entering long-term homelessness. The day after we end the long-term homelessness, there will be others to fill the ranks unless we don't do what's needed beforehand. And so as I asked last week, I hope that you fully support this $30 million proposal. It is absolutely needed. But we absolutely need flexibility in local communities that have other needs. There was a Council of Mayors report that says there's been an increase of families and individuals going to shelters and transitional housing programs because of the foreclosure crisis. We need the capacity of programs for them to go to and services to provide. So I hope you consider doing both. Priorities are one thing, but being exclusive is another.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Any further questions? If not, then this bill will be temporarily, without opposition, be laid over for inclusion in the bonding bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Representative Benson. Very good. Representative Hornstein. Welcome to the committee. And, let's see, who would like to move House File 3153 before us? Representative Suarez moves that House File 3153 before us. Representative Hornstein, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm very, very pleased to be the author of House File 3153, and I'm also happy to join you, Madam Chair, and Representative Peterson in this effort. Members, this is an appropriation for a very, very important model for addressing services for the homeless, known as Heading Home Hennepin, and I've admired this initiative since its inception. For those of you who don't know, it's a way to, under one roof, provide a wide variety of services for the homeless, everything from haircuts to job counseling and in between. And this has been so successful over the years. The latest one had 1,800 people. And just think about this. It's more than a statistic. This is 1,800 people that are getting help and some hope for the future. And so what this does is really moves this project forward, enhances the model by also really decentralizing it in a sense. So those that take advantage of these needed services can have a lot more access to them. But I would like to have Kathy Tenbrook, who is the coordinator of this effort, tell you more about it and fill in some of the details. And Kathy's been involved in advocacy and outreach and empowerment of the homeless for 15 years. I first met her when she was working at St. Stephen's Church's shelter program, and she's been, you know, with the city and Hennepin County, and now this joint effort. So there's really no better advocate, I think, to present this, and a real hero of mine. So I'll have her. If there's questions of me as the author and you want to ask them now, that's fine. Otherwise, Ms. Tenbrook can really fill in the blanks here.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Tenbrook.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, committee members, Representative Hornstein, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today. As Representative Hornstein said, my name is Kathy Tenbrook. I'm the coordinator to end homelessness for the City of Minneapolis and Hennepin County. And this is Matthew Ayers, program analyst for our Office to End Homelessness at Hennepin County as well. He can help with some questions if there are any. In 2006, very much in alignment with the state's business plan to end long-term homelessness, leaders and community stakeholders in Hennepin County came together as part of the Commission to End Homelessness and created our 10-year plan to end homelessness called Heading Home Hennepin. The plan was approved unanimously by our City Council and the County Board and is now our blueprint for how we will be addressing homelessness over the next 10 years. We've just completed our first year of implementation with the involvement of hundreds of partners. The state, I must say, has been a great partner in our efforts. The previously mentioned expansion of our prevention assistance program, the investment in capital for supportive housing, which of course you just spent a great deal of time talking about, the flexible service dollars that have come to local communities, and the rental assistance have all been some of the best tools that, in my 15 years working to end homelessness, that I have seen at the local level to actually end homelessness for people. So thank you for your commitment. And what it's done so far. The key elements of our local plan include homeless prevention, outreach, supportive housing, once again as we've been talking about, and access to services. And these are all, of course, very critical pieces of ending homelessness. But today I'm just going to be addressing the innovative way we plan to address the access to services for people in our community. We know that ending homelessness is both the right thing to do for individuals and families, as well as the cost-effective thing to do. We have some very compelling data in Hennepin County that we've looked at for folks who have spent the most time in our shelters and jail system and detox and rotating over and over through those systems. We looked at all of the people who have been in either jail and detox or shelter, over the last 5 years, and we've come up with a list of 266 people who have been in both of those systems combined over the last 5 years. Those 266 people have used 70,000 stays of jail, shelter, and detox at a cost of $4.2 million to Hennepin County. So you can see just from that one example the enormous cost and impact that people cycling through systems can have. So what Heading Home Hennepin, the state's business plan and long-term homelessness, this bill for the opportunity centers, the goal of all of that is to break those cycles and end the homelessness and ultimately end that cost burden on the community as well. Over the past year and a half, we've been using an innovation in Hennepin County called Project Homeless Connect. Project Homeless Connect is a one-stop shop service event for people who are experiencing homelessness or who are very close to experiencing homelessness. The idea is that instead of having people have to travel all over the community to get connected to housing and employment and benefits, medical care, that we bring all of those services to one location, under one roof, essentially, where people can come and get what they need. We have, in every event, about 100 different service providers there, providing housing, employment, education, veteran services, medical care, social security, identification assistance, mental health care, dental and eye care, early childhood programs, haircuts, etc. I mean, pretty much every service we could possibly think of that people need to help them escape or prevent their homelessness. And I know that, Madam Chair, you have seen the Project Homeless Connect events, as has Representative Hornstein and maybe others, Representative Peterson, I believe, as well. And we really appreciate you coming to see that. It's been a very successful event for us over the past. We've done 4 events so far. As Representative Hornstein mentioned, our last one had 1,800 men, women, children, and youth come through those doors to get connected to services. And it's quite remarkable the kinds of connections that can happen on those days. What typically would take perhaps months for somebody to connect to all the services can sometimes happen in hours. One example I like to tell, a little story, is there was a gentleman who came to one of our events who had serious and persistent mental illness. He'd been homeless for a very long period of time. He came to the event and he sat down with our intake folks and said, "I just need housing. I've been homeless a long time. I just need housing." We said, "Great." So we connected him with a housing provider there that had housing for people with serious and persistent mental illness. And they sat down, they talked, they said, "This is a great fit. But we need you to get a mental health evaluation and a signature from the doctor before we can actually get you into our housing program." So because they were there at this event and all of the services were on site, they literally just walked across the room. He got that mental health evaluation, he got the signature from the doctor he needed, and he moved in that day. And that's the kind of thing, once again, from doing this for so many years, when I used to work at St. Stephen's Shelter, that would really literally take months, if it would ever happen at all, because of all the steps that needed to happen to bring that together. So this event has been very successful. It's now happening in St. Paul and Duluth and other rural locations around the state. And we're very excited about the possibility of creating these kinds of connections to people, but more on a daily basis, as opposed to having to have these events that bring the services together. So during the development of our 10-year plan, we surveyed people who were experiencing homelessness to ask them what they thought would be important to include in the plan. The most critical need, of course, they said, was housing, supportive housing. And once again, you know, this, your support of what's needed to create that supportive housing is absolutely critical. They also told us, though, that they wanted to see Project Homeless Connect happen on a daily basis. So this led to the recommendation in our Heading Home Hennepin plan for the creation of opportunity centers, these one-stop-shop locations in the community available on a daily basis where multiple services that actually already exist would simply just be co-located into a location where people could access them more easily. Just like Project Homeless Connect, these services would include job training, housing, medical, dental care, veteran services, substance abuse treatment, mental health care, legal, etc. This concept of the Opportunity Center isn't new. This is something that is happening around the country and with great success. So we know that Project Homeless Connect works, and what we're simply proposing here is to take it to a larger scale to serve more people on a more regular basis. So what we're proposing is innovative, however, in that we are proposing to do, rather than having just one large location, one large opportunity center, we're proposing three separate population-specific centers that are coordinated with each other to ensure maximum access for all groups, so single adults, families, and homeless unaccompanied youth. We believe this would be most effective for the guests as well as less expensive because we are looking to partner with existing agencies and locations as much as possible to keep the costs low. We're currently drafting a solicitation of interest to identify potential partnering agencies. There is already a great deal of interest from providers in the community to help us with this initiative. We're also partnering with the University of Minnesota College of Design and their Dean Tom Fisher, who are helping us think about design aspects of these areas. And so we have, Hennepin County has committed in their capital improvement program for this year $2.5 million. And so our request to the state is simply to match the county's commitment to the capital needed to bring these to existence. This money would be used for rehabbing of existing spaces, potentially new space, whatever is needed to actually host these centers. Once again, working with already existing locations as much as possible, potentially some new spaces as well. So preventing and ending homelessness will take multiple strategies. Breaking down some of the service barriers that people face is a critically important piece, and we believe that these centers will help make that possible. So thank you very much for the opportunity to be here and present this information, and we are available if you have any questions.
Thank you. Any comments or questions? President Stevenson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifier, I like the concept of the program. I guess my question was, in your original statement, you said that there is millions of dollars that have been saved at the community level because of not having to put them in an incarcerated situation. And I'm wondering, if you had a successful program here, why are we coming to the state and asking for an appropriation? You said that, has this been brought to the Met Council, and obviously they're stepping out of the table with some funding as well?
Well, the successful program we're talking about is the Project Homeless Connect events that we do, and these are literally on one day, two times a year. So they have been successful as one-time events, but we right now don't have anything that is an ongoing Project Homeless Connect type of service. So on a daily basis, people do have to go to get those services all over the community. But two times a year, they can come to one location and get them. What we're proposing with these opportunity centers is that that would become a daily occurrence, that there would be places where these services were co-located every day. Does that answer your question?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Tenbrook, you mentioned this Project Homeless Connect. What's the dynamic as far as the dollars that it costs you to put this on, to provide these services on, you know, once or twice a year? Mm-hmm. What does that exponentially cost then to try and put it on a daily basis?
Well, you know, it's actually a very, very minimally, the event itself is actually minimal in cost because we rely on support from the private sector. They're entirely privately funded events. They don't have any government funds. It's other than staff time and the service providers who are government service providers being located there on that day. So the costs are minimal for the daily events. And so what we're thinking for the larger events is that if we can have those agreements with service providers to simply co-locate their services together. So, for example, working with housing providers and employment specialists, we wouldn't be spending money to get those services, we'd simply be asking them to locate those services all at the same location. We don't think those costs will be very expensive. There will be some operating costs, and that will, when we get the solicitation of interest back from our participating agencies, we want to know how they will creatively work with us to help with some of the operating costs. That will be part of the what we'll be looking at when we look at their proposals. But we do think that the main cost to this will be simply setting up the spaces appropriate to co-locate all these services. That's the capital needs.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Madam Chair, English to a test from Ms. Tenbrook or to Hornstein. You're asking for $2.5 million here for an ongoing for site acquisition, design, development of the opportunity center, but then also talks about the continuum of services needed to go along with that. Is there a breakdown to show where these dollars and how their dollars will be spent, and will that $2.5 million be specifically for acquisition and design, or has it been broken down so that 10% goes to the continuum of services, or how has that all been designed?
The $2.5 million we're requesting is simply for its capital, that none of that would go for services.
Oh, well, that doesn't say that, but... Okay, and that's strictly geo bonds, I take it.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, Ms. Tenbrook or Mr. Hornstein, $2.5 million is for the biennium, for a year, or how long are we looking at for?
It's a one-time funding for the creation of the capital needs to help create these spaces for the centers to exist. It won't be an ongoing request.
And then, Ms. Janice, I think she pointed out it's matched by Hennepin County in this proposal. Representative Stevenson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess to Representative Hornstein, and maybe to Ms. Orr as well. So does this fall into the category of qualifying for some of the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency because it's not considered housing, it's just a service that's available to the, it would not be considered competitive for the $30 million that we're talking about originally in the previous bill?
Right. You want me to answer that?
Sure.
Representative Peterson, we would not want to compete for any of those dollars of the $30 million because, it's, as I mentioned earlier, in our minds, those of us who work on the efforts to end homelessness, the creation of supportive housing is really first and foremost the solution to ending homelessness. This is simply to complement that and to supplement that with the service, helping people connect to the services they need. But we wouldn't want that to be in competition, so we wouldn't actually be applying to those dollars, nor would they be appropriate because this isn't providing supportive housing.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Oh, sorry, Representative Peterson.
I think it's more of a comment. On the one-time event you had, the first one was down at the Basilica. And I had been invited down there, so I tripped down there at 11 o'clock with my little bow tie on, and I walked inside and I said, oh my goodness, they knew I was a visitor. So the next year when you had it at the convention center, I grabbed three of my colleagues and said, come with me. So where we go? Just come with me. I want to show you something. So we went down to the convention center that day, and one of the representatives who is no longer with us was accosted by a person who said, you're a cop, aren't you? I know you're a cop, one of the homeless people. He just turned blue, and we had to rescue him from this experience. If you were to look at the Wilder report that was in the earlier testimony, it talks about the fact that most of the homeless population is in Hennepin County. And if they're in Hennepin County, i.e., if they were in Bloomington, and all of a sudden homelessness strikes like lightning, right now, it just happens. Where do they go? How do they find services after they have utilized bunking in somebody's house where the families are split up? They have to get the services. And if they're not familiar with the street, and if they're not familiar, they have to migrate into Minneapolis, because if they're coming off of 28th and Stevens Avenue in Bloomington, and for whatever reason they find themselves homeless in that instant of time, they have to get the services and they have to get into Minneapolis. They don't know where to go and how to do it. They may not even have a vehicle to do it. And typically, it's a female with one or two kids. So it is that population that has to be mobilized, and there has to be a place to go. and that's what this does. And it'll be a tremendous resource to the Bloomingtons, the Richfields, the Minnetonkas, that, you know, go right around the Hennepin County. And if you look at the numbers, most of these cases are in Hennepin County, and they eventually all migrate into downtown Minneapolis because that's where the services are. And that's where the facility has to be. And if your faith community wants to help homelessness, they would have to learn where this facility is and how to get somebody connected with them for service.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein?
Madam Chair, just a comment to Representative Peterson. You were out of the room when I thanked you in absentia for helping to sponsor this. And I think, you know, you get it, and I really appreciate that. And I think that, you know, this is, a really, truly a bipartisan effort, and it's a successful program, members, and it's demonstrated success, and so we want to be able to build on that and as Ms. Penbrook said, really create a model for the state, if not the nation.
Thank you. Any further discussion? And if not, without objection, we'll lay over House File 3153 for possible inclusion in the binding bill of the Controller. Thank you. I'm going to ask Mr. take over the chair for a minute.
Representative Clark.
I'd like to move that House File 2653 come before us. It's a bill dealing with neighborhood land trusts, and I have an amendment, a delete-all amendment that is to be passed out right now. And so I'd like to move that amendment be adopted. It puts the bill in the order that I'd like to talk about today.
Okay, with respect to the delete-all to the DE1 amendments, any discussion at this time? Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. It passes. It's in the
thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I hope this will be included in our committee's recommendations as we go forward. First of all, let me just say, I am very, very, very concerned about what's happening with the foreclosure crisis and have been talking with people around the state about what we can do. And there have been some working groups that have been working on some of the regulatory aspects of that, and I think we'll be hearing some of that in this committee, and it'll be heard in some other committees dealing with banking and commerce and so on. But what is this committee going to do? One of the things I've thought about is the whole arena of land trust as a possible way where we could help whole communities who are facing some of the problems that we see on the north side of Minneapolis, the east side of St. Paul, my own part of town in South Minneapolis. Whole communities are being devastated by the kind of foreclosures that have already happened or are coming. And we know in March there's predicted to be a lot more foreclosures that are going to be occurring. And one of the things I thought about in terms of land trust, I know that this is a way in the past that we've been able to look at affordable housing where a community comes together and help figure out a way, hopefully in this kind of case, to keep these are the people who are already living in the homes that may be threatened with foreclosure or others who would be of a similar need to be able to make their housing be long-term affordable by creating a land trust, community land trust, and letting the equity be limited and the mortgage come down to be affordable to the family that would be there. And I had some experience with that before I was in the legislature with limited equity co-ops and the kind of things that were being proposed as affordable housing in those days. So in talking with some of the experts about that, we did come forward with a piece of legislation that would have invested some, created some opportunities for that, both in appropriation and some bonding. But as I've talked with the people who've been involved with that, and I've got two of them right here, I think three maybe, who will be who would be the ones who would be helping us figure out how to use this vehicle, we decided we're not quite ready. And so that's why the amendment was adopted that basically says we need to have a working group to study how we could look at this issue of community-owned land trust. But I did want to bring this bill before us today so we could look at it. We could all kind of understand what the opportunities are here and hopefully then actually create these working groups so that by the time we come back next year, we will actually have some strong and clear recommendations. So I'd like to introduce a couple of witnesses here who I have great respect for. They've done a lot of work in this area and ask them to talk a little about this concept and about the amendment that's before us.
Okay, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and give testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. My name is Jeff Washburn, and I'm the director with the City of Lakes Community Land Trust. Our organization serves the city of Minneapolis, and appreciate the opportunity to speak on behalf of this bill as well as the subsequent amendment. Our organization, as I mentioned, serves the city of Minneapolis, but we're one of nine community land trusts that serve the state of Minnesota. We've been around for 5 years, but land trusts have been around in the state for over 10 years and serve the majority of the state's population through the geographies that our organization serves. I'm proud to say that given the foreclosure that crisis that's facing our state right now, the land trust and the work that we've done, we've not lost a single home. While there have been one or two foreclosures, we've never lost the affordability of a home. We've always been able to make that home affordable for future homeowners. The community land trust, and I think the uniqueness that we play in our community, is that we create ownership opportunities that otherwise wouldn't be created or be provided to low and moderate income households in the state of Minnesota. Equally important to us is the ability for our organization to keep those homes permanently affordable beyond the first sale for subsequent home buyers. And it's a way of home ownership that takes all of our public resources and those investments made in home ownership and keeps them there for multiple homeowners. Additionally, and equally important to our organizations are that ability to work with homeowners. And as I mentioned to the previous two discussions, trying to break the cycle that's occurring in our communities of homeowners getting to homes, communities crashing, and our losing of home ownership in our communities and folks falling into foreclosure. And we feel that the work that we do, not only in creating ownership opportunities, but helping homeowners stay in homes, is really the most important aspect of our work. One example that I'd like to bring up, our organization last year was approached by recently divorced mom of three living in South Minneapolis. Her husband had gotten them into a horrible loan, and she was facing having to either sell her home, move out of a community that she lived in for 13 years, or potentially going into foreclosure. She approached us, took a lot of wrestling, but we were able to take our program, in essence, provide funding so that she could refinance, stay in the home, and keep that home affordable, and keep her kids in the same school that they'd always been part of. And I think this is one approach, while a pilot approach at that, is one approach that can be built on in a way that we can work on sustaining home ownership in our community. We're also partnering with a number of other organizations currently on the north side looking at the foreclosed homes and how do we acquire those homes, make them affordable through the community land trust, but making sure that those homes are assets to our community and putting in some stopgaps so we don't see the same issues that we've seen in the past. As many of you may be aware, just in January of this year, there were over 700 foreclosures in Hennepin County alone. And in talking with my colleagues across the state, this is an issue that's going to continue, and in my opinion, increase significantly over the next couple of years. And we feel that community land trust, as well as other limited equity home ownership opportunities, are a way to bring some of those assets back into the community so that we get away from seeing the cycle that has repeated itself in previous years as well. The proposed amendment to House File 2653 looks at potentially addressing additional mortgage financing that it already provides and looking at how do we expand that to households that it previously hasn't helped. The State Housing Finance Agency has one of the best mortgage products available, and we feel that can even be better to help the folks that have gone through foreclosure, but also households that are facing foreclosure. Additionally, as presented, the opportunity for the nonprofit bonds, if there's a way for it to work with in addressing the homelessness issues, are there opportunities that we could also look at additional resources to create permanently affordable home ownership opportunities? And lastly, homeowners who are in home ownership, as many taxpayers are in many cases almost getting taxed out of homes, and our homeowners pay their fair share, but looking at our resale formula within the land trust way of home ownership, homeowners don't benefit from the full sale of that property, and we're hopeful that at least there'll be a look at the fairness issue around the taxes that homeowners would have to pay on home ownership. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. I'm Chip Hallbach with Minnesota Housing Partnership. And I'll just speak very briefly in that the Housing Partnership participated in the various working groups to deal with the foreclosure crisis. And it is a crisis affecting communities around the state, but it's particularly devastating in the central city neighbor communities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, and some ring communities such as Brooklyn Park. Recently, it's been reported that in St. Paul, there's over 1,600 vacant homes alone, far surpassing anything else that the city's seen. That the response to this crisis facing these central communities is a pressing statewide issue. It does not just affect the individual home buyers or the lenders who made those loans. It affects the neighborhoods and ultimately the communities and, by extension, the state of Minnesota. We believe that the community land trust model is one of the solutions that would be particularly valuable in those impacted communities. The city of Minneapolis has done some financial projections on what it would cost to treat properties to return them to the market. And it gets to be quite expensive. So to a large part, they want to focus their efforts in the neighborhood part of care. But they project that it would cost up to $200,000 to turn a vacant home that has been basically trashed out to the marketplace. Of that $200,000, as much as $75,000 per home needs to be subsidized. That is a large investment of public dollars. So as the public considers and will make that level of investment in some of these neighborhoods, it really does require how that value or how that level of investment can be maintained for future home buyers in those neighborhoods and to benefit the public over a long period of time. The land trust model is a one way and a good way to do that, and that's why we believe that this legislation and the pulling together of the working group is going to be a very important contribution to the overall approach to deal with the foreclosures facing the state.
Thank you, Mr. Hallbach. We do have a couple minutes left of our committee time, and I do want to get this done, but is there any other brief questions from representatives here? Representative Swales, you did have one.
Yes, I thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted you to know that as I was looking through your bill and I saw who the stakeholders would be in the working group, I think it's an interesting mix of people there, but I guess I just really do need to understand the concept one more time. I'm sure you've explained it, and my pea-sized brain is not listening very well right now. But you said in your earlier comments that these properties then would be held by the land trust once you invest in them, so that should a person move out, this property still would be available for long-term use by other families who would be in need of these properties. That would be the goal of this bill. Is that correct?
That is the way. Thank you, Representative. That is the way that we feel that we're able to work toward the foreclosures. I don't feel it's the only approach. The way that the community land trusts work, and I'll just speak to ours as an example, but the percentages vary by community, is that we provide a sizable down payment grant, and sometimes those grants are secured by loans from municipalities or others. We provide that funding to a homeowner. So in the event of, let's say, a $200,000 home, we provide $50,000, so the home buyer only needs to get a $150,000 mortgage. I should also offer, for all land trusts, we've always required fixed-rate, fixed-term mortgages, and I think that's also been one of the controls that we've been able to put in place that has helped alleviate the number of foreclosures with land trust homeowners. That fund and investment then stays with the property. If and when that household decides to sell, they would receive, in our case, 25% of any increase in value based on the difference between the appraisal when they purchased and the appraisal when they sold. The remaining 75%, we would take, add it to the $50,000 that we helped the first household with, and pass that on to the next household. And they would be income qualified as well.
Okay, thank you. That kind of makes sense now. Thank you.
Wonderful. Any other questions from the committee?
Mr. Chairman, just one quick comment. Thank you.
Representative Clark.
I want to have this just temporarily laid over. I was wanting to introduce it to people today. I'm sure there'll be more questions, and the amendment certainly could be even tweaked a bit if we need to, but I wanted to at least have people know that we're trying to work on something in this committee to deal with the foreclosure crisis beyond just the fraud and the bad cases out there. I also wanted to call your attention to, I believe, a document that Mr. Halbeck, can we get this passed out, or was it already passed out?
No.
Okay. This is a document that he brought with us talking about the sale of public housing in Minnesota, and I want to ask him to take 1 minute to share this with you. It came up as a question in our last meeting, and I appreciate that he brought this forward with us today. It's not related to this bill, Mr. Chairman. It's just related to previous discussion.
Okay. Mr. Halbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I believe it was last Wednesday or Thursday I testified on behalf of our study on public housing and mentioned that some 80 public housing units across Minnesota were being sold primarily because of the cutbacks in federal funding. And I was asked to respond, where are those public housing units being sold? Well, this document, and actually the story is a little bit better in that only 73 have been sold. But the reason that between the 80 and the 73, the 7 units, that those were planned to be sold by St. Paul PHA, but because of the funding provided by the legislature in 2007, the $2.5 million supplemented by money from Minnesota Housing, St. Paul Public Housing Agency received some of those funds and was able to hold on to those 7 units. So that's an immediate return on the investment the state made. I should, though, say that there are an additional 300 public housing units where the agencies have said, because of these financial pressures, there's a that they are considering offering them for sale too. So this really does help to tie together some of the themes today, that the best way to stop homelessness and to avoid some of the costs of dealing with long-term homelessness is to keep people into housing. Public housing helps people who, many of whom would otherwise be homeless, by the state making a $5 million investment. That worked out to be a little over $1,000, $2,000 a unit in saving some of the public housing that the state now invests. And the St. Paul record shows what has happened because of that investment and as a part of the response to homelessness in Minnesota.
Thank you.
So we had all that on the table. So, Mr. Chairman, if this could be temporarily laid over, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. Any other discussion? Seeing none, then that this bill, House File 2653, will be laid over for inclusion, possible inclusion in our bonding bill.
Thank you.
And then I think we got a couple of orders that we can clean up here. Did we get anybody to approve the minutes from last meeting? Representative Shumper, you look like you want to do that.
Yes, I'll move approval of those, I think, January 30th.
Okay. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That's carried. And now we, I think, need a motion to adjourn. Representative Swell moves that we adjourn today. All those in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? We are adjourned.
Yes.